You're listening to the Old Time Radio Show on 71K News Talk Radio. Now back to Denver's Old Time Radio History buff, John Dunning.
Okay, and we're going to go out to Los Angeles now, I believe. It's a Los Angeles area phone number. Is that where you are, Candy?
Burbank, same thing.
Burbank. Okay, that's suburban Los Angeles then, right?
I'd say Los Angeles is a supply town.
Supply town. Okay, we're talking to Candy Candido, and let me read you what I jotted down here and see if this is anywhere close to being accurate. I have you as a bass player.
That's how I started off.
And you appeared with Gene Austin's musical group on bass in 1933.
John, let's stay at that little point right there, will you?
Okay.
1933, I ran away from home and got married.
All right.
And tomorrow is the 1st of March. It'll be our 49th anniversary. Pretty good?
That's probably something of a record, especially for the Hollywood area, isn't it?
That's right. And I was playing bass with, ran away with Gene Austin, played bass, and there's a fellow named Coco. His real name was Otto Heimel. He played four-string guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And if we ever do another show like this, I'm going to send you a tape of the first record we made in 1933, okay?
That'd be great. I'd love to hear it.
I go on with your pencil mark.
Okay, I have you as being in the Ted Fiorito Orchestra, right?
Well, that was 1934, at the end of 34, I joined Gene Fiorito.
And I'm a little confused on this. My notes said that Fats Waller was in that orchestra. I don't know whether that was during or before your time there.
Fats Waller was never with Fiorito. No, Fiorito had all stars. He had Betty Grable,
right?
Farrickson, and somebody else was a big star then. I can't remember it now.
Well, Fats Waller certainly didn't, he wasn't the type who would seem to be with Fiorito. I think I got that out of Brian Russ' discography book.
That's wrong.
Okay. You were reviewed by George Simon in Metronome as being a funny bass player who does amazing things with his voice. When did you start doing that?
Well, ever since I was a little boy, it started, Johnny, you don't mind me calling you Johnny.
No, that's fine.
When I was a little boy, there was a man upstairs from my house. He had some kind of sickness, and he used to kind of burp all the time, you know? Is it all right to do it on your radio? Is this clean?
Go ahead.
And it would sound like, oh? And I was a little boy, and I used to try to mock him, and I got pretty good with it because he would, and I'm right back, see? And he told my dad. My dad used to whip me for doing it, but I never stopped. I finally got control of it, and I made money with it. That's how it started. Okay?
When did you... you also did a very high-pitched female-type voice at the same time.
Yeah, well, I'll never forget. A song came out in those days about three trees, and I liked it. And so I started to do the three trees and the three voices. Like, I don't know if you ever heard it, but I'll also send you that record. And it says, one there, one there, and one over there. So I'll send you that record for our next talk show, okay?
Okay, great.
Hey, you mentioned Frank Nelson's going to be on your show. He's a very good friend of mine.
Is he?
You know, he's got more money than God allows, you know that?
He's doing McDonald's ads now.
You're telling me. He I don't know if he still owns it, but he had a camera shop. Beautiful place. A real nice guy and a talented man.
Yeah, he really was, you know. He could do that.
Talented, no kidding.
He'd do that sarcastic comedy so well.
When
did you first meet him?
Well, on the Jimmy Durante show. He did a lot of Jimmy Durante shows.
How long were you on Durante's show? I have a year of them.
I was trying to figure out. 1936, I did 10 radio shows with Jimmy. And then 1947, I did 37 shows. These are radio shows now.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1948, I did 13 and 15 shows. And I also, that same year, I did two Bud Abbott and Costello shows.
Uh-huh.
So, and then I stopped counting.
when you were, let me go back a minute. You said you had a according to, let me go back to Russ' book again. You correct me if I say something wrong. I was just digging through my library at home, and I dug out these things about you. By the way, it is 4 o'clock, and this is KNUS in Denver, and we're right in the middle of old-time radio. I'm talking to Candy Candido from Burbank, California. And according to Rust, you were with a group called Candy and Coco, and that was the one with Coco Heimel, right?
That's right. That was in New Orleans. We played on Bourbon Street when we were kids, and we played for tips. We never got any salaries. And I fell in love with this little girl, and I wanted to marry her. And my family was against it, and so was her family. So Gene Austin came into town, and I asked him, I said, hey, you could use us. He says, what do you mean I could use us? So I said, come out to the car, and I want you to hear a fellow and myself play guitar and bass. So he came out to the car, he heard us, and he signed us. And I said, okay, I'll sign my contract, but it helped me get married. And that's what he did.
How did he do that?
Well, he took us to a place called Kenner, Louisiana. That's about 20 miles. That's where the airport is. It's about 10 miles outside of New Orleans. And we got the justice of the peace, and we got married. We've been married ever since. Pretty good, huh?
49 years.
49 years to
That's a long time.
And I have one son who is 48. He's an attorney. I have another son who's 39. He's a prop master. And I have a daughter who's 31. She lives in Milpitas. Now, you don't know where Milpitas is, do you?
No.
That's right near San Jose. And her husband works at Sunnyvale, which is the Silicon Valley of the world, you know, capital of the world, I should say. Then I have another daughter who is 29, and she is married to a fellow named Gary Lindsay, who you'll be hearing a lot of because he's an anchor man for TV.
Uh-huh.
You see, in Salinas.
Have any of your children inherited your vocal cords?
My youngest son, the one that's 39. He's 39. And he's great. Real funny guy, but he's a prop master. He makes more money doing that. You know what a prop master is?
No.
Huh?
Not exactly.
Well, a prop master works for pictures and television, and any props on the set he has to have, or he has to get, or he has to rent or buy, you know?
Uh-huh.
You're on your desk. What have you got on your desk that you're looking at? Anything?
I just have a couple of pieces of paper and...
Clock?
Got a clock.
You got an ashtray?
Some buttons. Yeah, there's an ashtray here that's left
that's
from...
That's all props.
Huh?
Props. And props can be as big as an organ, you know?
Uh-huh.
So,
In other words, he is given a scene to set, and he sets it, right?
That's right.
Uh-huh.
Getting back to the radio shows, I also did 12 Gene Autry radio shows. When Pat Buttram was shot out of a cannon one time, it broke his back, and they needed a replacement, so they put me on the show as a little boy who lived next door, whose voices kept changing every time a Gene would talk to me. I didn't know he confused him, you know? It was a cute show. You want to get back to the first Jimmy Durante show?
Yeah, hold on a minute.
Go ahead.
When did you do the Autry program?
Well, that was in 1948.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I think it was in 1948. I'll look through my records and let you know the next time I talk to you, but I know I did 12 shows for it.
What other shows now did you do? I'm talking about variety shows besides Durante, Costello, and Autry.
That's another show you should get. The Eve Arden radio show.
Armis Brooks?
Miss Brooks. Not Armis Brooks. The Eve Arden radio show.
Now, Eve Arden, as I recall, was on The Village Store.
But what?
The Village Store, is that the one?
I don't know, but it was called Eve Arden radio show.
About what time was that?
Well, I'll have to look that up, too, because...
In the 40s?
I had to be her protege on that show. And every guest would come on, she would want them to hear me sing, you know? And, It was a very, very cute show. I think you'd enjoy that, too.
Eve Arden had a show with Jack Haley about 1946.
That's it. I did 8 shows with her in 1947. I see it right here.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Okay, good. What I would like to do, I think, is ask you a few questions about some of these other shows and then talk about the Durante show just before we hear it.
All right.
How'd you get in with Abbott and Costello?
Well, they called me because they were doing, they were trying to raise money for, you know, Abbott had a thing for kids. I forgot the name of it, because this is a long time ago, you know. And they asked me to do some radio shows for them, and I did 2 of them. There was no money involved in it. And that's how they called me to do it. And incidentally, you know, Bud Abbott and I teamed up after Lou Costello died. You know that?
No.
Oh, yeah, that's a very sad story. We were doing just great. And we were in New York somewhere and flying. He got very, very sick, and we had to stop.
Abbott had a lot of problems with taxes, didn't he?
Both of them.
Yeah, that's right. They made millions of dollars, and both of them went broke.
Some guy in the IRS really had it in for him, and they went back on 11-year audit. So don't say they can't go back 11 years. They did.
Yeah, it was Joe Lewis, too.
Oh, that poor guy. Oh.
Yeah. What did you do with Eve Arden now? You went on her show and just... Did you do a variety of voices for them?
Yeah, I don't know, like guys sang. Like, they had a big opera star. I can't think of her name right now. And Eve Arden was telling this big opera star about her protege. And she introduced me as Mr. Candido, you know. And she says, go ahead, he's going to sing something for you. And so... Before I sang, I went, you know, all the voices, you know. And she says, oh, he's only warming up, and the big opera star said, sounds like he's falling apart. So then I went into a song. I can't tell you the name of the song I sang now, you know. It's a long time ago you're talking about. And I've got a little bitty brain, John.
When I called you a while ago when we talked, you said you couldn't do these voices anymore, but you sound just like you sounded on the tape.
Oh, yes, I can still do them, but when you hear that radio show... You realize I went all the way up to, almost to the top of the piano, to the bottom of the piano. That's 6.5 octaves I did on that show.
And I mean just as fast as you can blink your eye.
Well, I can still, as fast as I blink my eye, talk to you. If you want, I'll confuse you on this phone. You won't know who you're talking to.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you know, like I do a gimmick. I was in Allentown, Pennsylvania last year, and they had a pretty nasty operator. So I called her. And she says, hello, hello. I says, I've been trying to get you for the past 25 minutes. She says, I'll speak to one of you at a time. And she hung up.
That's wonderful stuff.
Before you start asking anything, how is Keith?
Keith Hughes?
Yeah.
He's fine.
What a nice guy. We sure miss him in Allentown, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Well, maybe he's listening. He said he was going to listen today.
What is hometown?
Here?
Keith. Allentown. Isn't that his hometown?
We're standing here, both of us shaking our heads. We don't know.
Oh, you don't know. Who's both of us?
Kathy Bradshaw, my producer here today. Keith is off on Sunday, and Kathy does the show here today.
Oh, I see.
Listen, how did you meet Jimmy Durante?
Well, I was working at a club called the Florentine Gardens here. And I was there for 5 years. And I do a number called... Shooting of Dangerous Dan McGrew. And at the last part of Dangerous Dan McGrew, Lou's boyfriend, they have a duel, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And Lou's boyfriend shoots Dan. And now Dan says, he got me. He sees the pants. I think I'm dying. And I'm feeling mighty low. Well, Jimmy Durante heard this. And he called his writers to come over and catch me the next day. He says, I want that on my show. Now, I'm going to give you the exact date, too. That was on October the 25th, 1946. So the first show, I did a poem. And Jimmy says, he says, how do you like that? All these gals with these long dresses, you don't see legs no more than she eat chicken.
So I said, well, I can tell you about it in the little poem.
He says, you can. He says, tell me.
I said, girls are wearing their dresses longer,
and legs they do not show. So now instead of whistling, I'm feeling mighty low.
That's great.
That's the first time I did it on the Jimmy Durante show. And he got so many letters, and people thought he was doing the voice at first, you know. And I'll never forget they gave me a name of Tyrone Touchbottom on that show. So I think I... did about 40 poems. Boy, I sure wish I had those scripts. I wish I had the radio shows, too.
Well, you can... Yeah, I've got a bunch of them. I've got, I don't know. You probably got all the ones I've got, though.
Well, I'll drop you a line and let you know what I've got. What I have, what I haven't got, would you mail them to me?
Sure, I will.
You sound like a pretty nice guy. How old are you?
I'm 40.
40 years old.
Yeah, but I have to be a nice guy now. You see, I'm on the radio. See, I've got an image to maintain here.
I was born 1913, Christmas Day.
Huh. Listen, you do a pretty good Jimmy Durante there.
Well, I was with him long enough. Oh, you know, but he was a sweetheart. what fun I used to have with that guy. Oh, I used to love to torment him, you know?
He was amazing. He had an ability to butcher the king's English without breaking stride at all.
Yeah, well, his favorite line was, he just teach me to speak right, and nobody will work. That was his favorite line. You know, like one time we were in New York at the Astor Hotel, and he was in the bathroom. And I knocked on the door. He says, who is it?
I said, may I come in?
And I opened the door.
What kind of reaction did you get?
Oh, well, I can't tell you, but I can imagine. He threw everything at me. It was a beautiful...
Well, I guess I'll have to use my imagination as to what everything was then.
And everybody else will have to use their imagination.
Jimmy Durante had probably the greatest reputation in the business as a philanthropist. He was known for doing wonderful things for folks.
Oh, man, we did more benefits than... Whew, I mean to tell you, benefits all over the country, not only here, but all over the country. He was a beautiful man.
I think Bob Hope says on this program we're going to hear coming up in a few minutes, he even talks about how he opens his wallet more times a day than any other guy in town. That was your experience in seeing him do that? I mean...
Oh, yeah. Like one time I was... I used to pick him up every morning to go to rehearsal for the radio shows. And I had a 48 Cadillac. So we leave his house and we get about... I imagine 5 blocks, and the car just stopped, and somebody grabbed it in the back. So I got out, and I looked at it, and holy cow, the back spring broke, and it tightened the brakes so nothing would move, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we had to have a car and leave it there. So we ride, and he says, kid, you need a new car. So we go to rehearsal, and I call up my oldest son to help me pick up the car. We go out there. Another Cadillac waiting for him. It wasn't a new one, but it was another Cadillac. He had somebody sell mine and buy me another one. I think he bought me a 50. That's right. Mine was a 48, and the new one he bought was a 50.
A 48 Cadillac, a 50 Cadillac, that was a pretty classy car in those days. It brings me a question. There was pretty big money in network radio in those days, wasn't there?
Oh, yeah. Jimmy did very, very well, especially on his personal appearances. And, you know, we worked in a lot of clubs with him. I used to go work all the clubs, the Copacabana in New York, and Drake Hotel in Chicago was a great date. Oh, we really enjoyed that. Traveled all over the world. I even went to Europe with him in 1952. I worked the Palladium with him. And I used to do a gimmick with him where I was a guy from the newspaper with press on the front of my hat, and I had a camera and a bunch of bulbs in it, and he used to tell a story. That's how he'd open the show. He had to start off each day with a song, even when things go wrong. And he says, you know, I met the adjutant general, and he took me out to teach me how to ride a horse. And he said, I don't know how to ride a horse. He says, well, it's simple. He says, when the horse goes up, you go up. When the horse comes down, you come down. Well, why? I went up. And just when he gets to the punchline, I would take a picture in the audience. He would look at me. He says, don't you ever take a picture of me unless I'm prepared. And he'd take out a comb, and he would comb his hair. And he says, there ain't much there, but every strand has a muscle. So he starts and tells a whole joke again. And when he gets to the punchline again, boom, I take another picture. Then he screams at me again. He says, come up here. Come up here. And I don't. And I start walking off. And he comes up, and he grabs me by the... edge of the coat, brings me up the stairs, and as I get to the top of the stairs, I do a platform. The camera goes up. It's a breakaway camera, breaks in 1,000 people. The bulbs come down. He says, that was a terrible fall. He says, how do you feel? I'm feeling mighty low. That's how I used to get my entrance. He says, what a beautiful verse. You got a beautiful verse. He says, you want a rendition of a little song with me? And I shake my head and we go into a song. So that's how I used to do it with him.
We're talking to Candy Candido from Burbank, California. This is Old Time Radio.
John.
Yes.
When you get to Jimmy Randy show, do you know who Reggie Jackson is?
Oh, sure. Baseball player.
Uh-huh. Well, I know what I wanted to tell you. This we've got a beautiful hotel by the name of the Bonaventure in Los Angeles.
Uh-huh.
And these two elderly ladies, it's supposed to be a true story. Yesterday, they went down there, somebody took them, I think, and they went to go to lunch, and it's 20 stories. So they get into the elevator. And as they get into the elevator, and the door's about to close, this big, tall, colored guy walks in with two Doberman pinches. Now, the elevator's going up, and these two women are getting nervous, you know. And the more nervous they get, the more excited the dogs are starting to get. And all of a sudden, this big, tall, colored guy says, "Sit!" And the whole four of them sat down. This is supposed to be a true story.
Okay.
You picture two old ladies and the two dogs sitting down? So finally, he gets out, I think, on the 11th floor, and they go up to the, what's his name, first place they head for was the ladies' room, I hear. And then they go having lunch. And then after they have lunch, they go to pay their bill, and the maitre d' says, "I'm sorry, your bill has already been paid." They said, "By whom?" He said, "By the gentleman in the elevator with the dogs. He felt that he put you through enough hassle, you know." And they said, "Well, who was he?" He says, "Didn't you recognize Reggie Jackson?"
Hmm.
Supposed to be a true story.
Well, that's a wonderful anecdote.
That's a good story?
Yeah. Listen.
Put you up to date, that's all.
Well, listen, I'm glad you did that. how much could you make for appearing on a big-time network show like that as a guest?
Well, it varied in different years. You know, when I first started, I asked for so much, and they didn't want to give it to me. Then I stuck out for my $750 a week there, you know, because you had to rehearse 4 days for a radio show then.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I got the first year with Jimmy. That $750 each show.
Did the sponsor pay him, or and then he just?
I got a check from the Durante show. Mm-hmm. Put Jimmy Durante's check on it. And of course, all the other people, I guess, the same way on the show. Frank Nelson, he most probably got the same. I don't know how much he got, but Dave Barry used to be on our show. You know who Dave Barry is?
No, I don't know the name.
Dave Barry's a very, very talented guy. He's got a gold mine. He's with Wayne Newton. He's the front act for Wayne Newton now on every show that Wayne Newton does. In Vegas, I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know who Wayne Newton is?
Oh, sure.
I mean, you guys up in the country in Denver, I don't think you guys know too much.
that's a very good possibility.
I know what I wrote down here. Last time I was in Denver, I did a show. Is there the Inches Gardens there?
Mm-hmm.
There was an Inches Gardens.
Yeah.
And I met the nicest guy at the newspaper, Max Goldberg. You ever hear of him?
Don't think I know him.
Well, he must have been probably out there for a long time. But I just wanted to know if he was still living. Okay, if you don't know, we'll end that conversation.
Well, if anybody knows, give us a call and let us know here in the next few minutes.
Okay.
I was just told by Dick McDaniel, our newsman here, that Max Goldberg is dead.
Oh, okay. He was a nice man.
Okay. Hey. Yeah, I used to be in the news business here, but it was fairly recent. I don't go back that far.
Yeah, he's still a kid. I got socks as old as you. Then I'm on.
Listen, Victor Moore was a guest on the Durante show and is on this tape we're going to hear, and he was on almost as a regular throughout that 1948 season. Was that another example of an old friend who had fallen on hard times that Durante helped out, or what?
Oh, no. He was very big then. He was married to a young girl, too, a very beautiful girl. I think he was about 80 then, and she was about maybe 35. Oh, but he was a sweetheart, too.
I know he was big earlier than that.
No, he was big then when, I think he was still in the contract to MGM in those days.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure, but I think so. I know he used to come to work in a big, beautiful automobile, too. Big limousine.
He was billed as the Lothario of the Lumbago set.
Uh-huh. He was adorable, you kid.
Did you know Peggy Lee very well?
Very well. Oh, what a doll she was to him. Could she sing? Of course, to me, you just have to be next to Peggy Lee and let her sing. I think her microphone spoils her.
Huh.
Well, she phrases. There's nobody in the world like her. I think she's great. I was great, anyway. I haven't seen her in a long time.
She's still going strong.
I know that, but I haven't seen her at all. I've been having I've got a gimmick that I do. I have been having the same agent, a guy named E.O. Stacy. He's with ICM. And happens to be one of the biggest agencies in the world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it was MCA, and MCA had to take away all the... They either had to go in pictures, be producers, or be agents, see? So MCA became producers. So all the agents that were with MCA bought out GAC, then they went to UTM, and now it's ICM. And they have all the biggest stars in the world. And I'm about the lowest on the totem pole. And the guy that I've been with for 48 years, how I know it's 48 years, my youngest son was born then. His name is E.O. Stacy. And I'm trying to think why I brought this up.
I get into those kind of situations myself.
To tell you a story that you just had, what did you just ask me?
Well, I don't know.
Well, see, we're both in the same.
How about that for a piece of 10-carat radio?
If I think about it, I'll come back to it.
I asked you about Peggy Lee.
About Peggy Lee.
Yeah, so I must have had something to do with the agent.
Yeah. Oh, I know what it was now. So since I met this guy, I've been doing a thing called Goodwill Ambassador and Master of Ceremonies at State Fairs. Now, this makes my 26th year going back to Allentown as the Goodwill Ambassador and the Master of Ceremonies of the shows, you know. And this year I'm going back and go to St. Paul, Salt Lake City, Shreveport, Louisiana. That's all I can do because I go 2 weeks before the fair opens. And that's how I happen to meet Keith.
Uh-huh.
So,
Well, I'm glad you happened to meet Keith because he just happened to mention it to me in the hall that he had met Candy Candido, and I asked him to see if he could track you down.
Okay.
And I'm glad you were able to be on. Listen, I'm going to have to bail out if I'm going to get the tape on.
Okay.
Hang on the phone. I want to get your address because you asked for a cassette, and I want to send it to you. So hang on for a minute. We're going to put the tape on now, and I'll talk to you again in a second.